Thanks, Shane. Thank you very much.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Enjoy the show.
Thank you very much, Dermot. Good afternoon on this Monday afternoon. How are you? How was your weekend? Good? Good. 51551 ray@rte.ie. Gardening makes you a happier person. It's official now. Almost 61% of gardeners said that things they did in their lives were worthwhile. 54% of gardeners said they felt happy the previous day compared to only 45% of people who didn't garden. I suppose if you were asked, are gardeners happier than other people, you would say yes. But now there's scientific proof. A survey conducted by the BBC Gardeners World magazine. I was in the garden over the weekend, some nice weather, and I did a bit of gardening. And I have to say, it made me feel happier. It did. It's that thing of putting your hands on your hips, standing back and taking a look at what you've accomplished. It might be the smallest thing in the world, but you've done it with your own hands and it's there for all to see. So that there's it's lovely. It's a lovely thing to do. And maybe it comes to you late in life. It's only come to me in the last while. There was a bit of a disaster with two of the things I'm growing. There's beetroot and basil and lettuce and rocket and oriental greens. Anyway, there was somebody over and there was board games being played and they were pushing stuff to clear the table, and the basil and the beetroot, gone. That's them. So I'm down to four things I'm growing at the moment in boxes on a table inside. And I think we have Mick Kelly coming in this week from Grow It Yourself. So mine will be a bad report card on that one. You know, I don't know if you run a route. Some people do. They run a route and they meet the same people, you know, most days, and you get to know them, and you have, I wouldn't say they're conversations, because everything's fleeting. You're moving. You're moving past them and they're shouting at you and all. Anyway, yesterday, running, da da da, and this woman says, "Where's the dog?" And I was trying to encapsulate, you know, where the dog was in a couple of words, because I was on the move, moving fast and moving past her. And I said, "The wife takes him on a Sunday." The wife takes him on a Sunday. And then as I ran past, I go, what's she thinking now? She's thinking that maybe we're separated and that Jenny has rights over the dog on a Sunday. The wife takes him on a Sunday. And then I thought, wouldn't that be a great name for a novel? The wife takes him on a Sunday. And it could be about a dog. And it could be about, you know, the dog sniffing somebody, and there could be an affair involved. And I just went way mad. That's where the head went. The wife takes him on a Sunday, a new novel by Ray Darcy. Coming to bookshops near you now, or maybe not. We spoke to David Gray on Friday and we had a lovely time with him. And we had fans on, and we had people he has worked with over the years in Ireland. And we discussed is a big word, but we chatted about how White Ladders came about. Even just White Ladder. It wasn't called White Ladders. There was only one ladder. How White Ladder came about, and how Ireland had a huge part in its success, and his success indeed. Anyway, we spoke to a fan, John Murphy, and John had lost his White Ladder cassette, and he was out for a walk with his grandson, and he was chatting away to David Gray, telling him how he used lyrics from his song, the song Shine, as part of his Father of the Bride speech. And it was lovely. And anyway, John was back onto us over the weekend to ray@rte.ie. This is just a note to say thank you for the privilege of allowing me to talk to David Gray last Friday. The subsequent gig was absolutely fantastic. You see, he was in the Three Arena over the weekend. It was David Gray at his best, playing the music from the famous White Ladder album. I did locate my tape copy safe and secure behind the television. I have no idea how it got there. However, mystery solved. You see, I told you. On the night, there was a cameo appearance from Mark Almond. Oh no, with Say Hello, Wave Goodbye and Tainted Love. The evening was rounded off with a rendition of Flame Turns Blue and my favourite Shine. This was the song I lifted four lines for my Father of the Bride speech. The evening concluded with a tribute to the late, great David Bowie. Please pass on my thanks to Emily and Neil. And if your paths cross with David again, please pass on my thanks to him. John Murphy. Well, John, you know there's a new David Bowie documentary. The man who made the documentary about Kurt Cobain has spent 5 years of his life cobbling together millions of bits he got from the David Bowie estate. Better not get my two Davids mixed up. And it was shown at Cannes over the weekend, and that's something I'm really looking forward to, because I'm a huge David Bowie fan. Anyway, glad you enjoyed your chat with David Gray. Glad you enjoyed the concert. All good there. Grace has been on to ray@rte.ie. I wondered if you could ask your listeners a question for me. There are nearly 800,000 Irish living in New Zealand at present, and with everything that's been going on globally over the past few years, our borders have finally opened, allowing thousands of us the freedom to fly home to be reunited with loved ones after over 3 years apart. That's big news, isn't it? Big news. We, like so many, are travelling home with our little people, a three-year-old and a one-year-old. My question is this. As we haven't lived in Ireland for over 12 years, we are so out of touch with what's the must-see visit, let alone what's a great visit for children. With this in mind, as so many will be returning home this summer for a visit, could you ask your listeners, what are the must-do or must-visit spots with children for the summer months ahead? We'll be mostly based in Dunboyne and West Clare. Your listeners always come up with great options, and I'm sure lots of others will get use out of the list also. Thanks in advance. Long-time listener through the podcast from Christchurch, New Zealand. That's Grace. Grace, three-year-old and one-year-old, they'd be specific tastes, wouldn't they? So if you have a three-year-old and a one-year-old, or one of those, and you know where you bring them and where they're entertained and where they like, would you please pass it on to us, and we will pass it on to Grace so that when she comes home from New Zealand, she'll be able to keep her little people entertained. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. The Art of Losing has won the Dublin Literary Award, and Alice Zeniter, a French author, will get €75,000. She doesn't get the full €100,000 because Frank Wynne, who translated The Art of Losing into English, gets €25,000 of the €100,000. So congratulations to them both. And because the Dublin Literary Award has been announced today, the journal.ie asked its readers, how often do you read a book? Now, I suspect the people who go onto the journal.ie would be probably book readers. They'd probably read more books than the average. Maybe I'm wrong. Anyway, it's interesting because we were speaking to author Kevin Power last week about his new book. And in that, he says most people don't read. So I'm just looking at the results of the survey on journal.ie. So the majority people, when I say the majority, 27% of people said they read less than 10 books a year. And then 23% said, I don't really read books. And then you go between 11 and 20 books, that's 18%. More than 30 books maybe that's about 13%. And then there's 21 to 30 books, 508 people there. So more than less than 10 books, 23%. I don't really read books, 20%. Between 11 and 20 books, 18%. What category do you fall into? And since we're talking books, Time magazine's list of the 100 most influential people of 2022 has been released. Oprah's in there, all of those sort of people, you know, big influential people. And the only Irish person who features in the list is Sally Rooney. And they've asked other people in the same area, I suppose, to write a little citation for the people. So they've asked Lena Dunham. Lena Dunham. And she writes of Sally Rooney, several times in a generation, there is a writer who speaks such basic truths in such skillful prose that they become a signpost for all our needs and concerns, all our unanswered questions and anxious dreams. Her ability to swerve means she won't just be the hottest young novelist of the year. She will be a permanent fixture, not just as a hard back in the hands of appealing youth, but as a critic in the collective conscience. So that's what Lena Dunham says about our Sally Rooney, one of the 100 most influential people of 2022 in Time magazine's list. And the other person we recognised, and we're still trying to get him on, the inventor of Wordle, Josh Wardle. And he's in the innovators category. So we put another email into him. Congratulations, Josh, on being listed in Time magazine's list of 100 most influential people. This might be a nice time to give us an interview. Please, please, please. How many emails is it now, Niamh? 20 at least. But we'll keep going and we'll try and get a chat with him. 515-51RAID.RTE.ie. It's lashing rain and louth. However, on the garden side, there is apparently a natural antidepressant in soil. So get those hands dirty, says Susan. One word answer to that canine query. Doggone. Doggone. That's very good. Where's the dog? Dog gone, yeah. Spread some mulch over a flower bed on Saturday. Afterwards, I watched over it with a beer like a king. entering my 30s has changed me, says Evan in Dublin 12. It's well free as all with your gardens. What about us folk in flats and apartments with none? And before you ask, no, we've no balcony either. Ah, and COVID was particularly tough for us, having to listen about how good it was for you to get out in your garden, from Caroline Riggs. Fair enough, Caroline. We are lucky to have a garden. And I think people appreciate that now after COVID, and realising there are people like you who don't have a garden. Harry Styles has a new album out. It's called Harry's House. See, it's all connected really, isn't it? And he's doing a lot of house-related promotion around it. For example, our Aisling, who's our resident Harry Styles reporter, she got to attend a very special album-listening party in a house in Cabra with Sony Music. And tonight, Harry Styles, him one-fifth, one-fourth, one-quarter, one-whatever, of One Direction, is reading the CBBS bedtime story. And no surprise, the book is also house-themed. Do you want to have a quick listen to it? This is just a bit of Harry Styles, as he will feature on CBBS tonight at 10 to 7.
CBBS bedtime story.
Hello, I'm Harry. Welcome to my house. I love it here. I like to listen to music and read and hang out with my friends. Tonight's bedtime story is about a house full of love and laughter. It's called In Every House, On Every Street, and it's by Jess Hitchman, with pictures by Lily Labelaine.
Oh, there you go, Harry Styles. We have Anne-Marie Tobin coming in. She's the HSE lead on dermatology, and this month, May, is melanoma month, and Anne-Marie is coming in to offer us advice on how we should treat our skin in the coming months and keep it safe from the sun. And she's going to introduce us to the five S's. I know slop is one of them, slip is another, but she has all five. So we'll be talking to her. So if you have any questions about your skin and the sun, get them into us now, ray@rte.ie. Should we go back to Harry for our opening song? I'll tell you about our quiz in a moment.
Come on, Harry, we want to say goodnight to you.
Harry Styles from the Radio 1 album of the week, As It Was. And that's the song. The single, I just tore myself up there. Sad news just in. Acclaimed singer-songwriter Carl Coughlan has died, age 61. His death was announced via his family, who commented that the Cork-born artist had slipped away peacefully in hospital after a long illness on May 18th. And he first came to our attention as lead singer of Micro Disney, which was formed in Cork back in 1980. And then he moved over to London, and the band became a five-piece, and they had five albums for Rough Trade Records, and never really commercially successful, but got a lot of critical acclaim. And their album The Clock Comes Down the Stairs reached number one in the UK independent charts back in 1985. And after Micro Disney wrapped up, he went on to form Fatima Mansions, and more critical acclaim followed. Very young, only 61. So may you rest in peace, Carl Coughlan. Pronounce my name. Talk all we may, she can't but conceal the fullness of a secret. It's our lives, it's nothing. Great songs. 51551 ray@rte.ie. And Grace was looking for ideas for her little people when she comes home from New Zealand and hasn't been home in 12 years. For that lady from New Zealand, great website called mykidstime.com. Loads and loads of suggestions, venues, attractions, etc. for keeping kids entertained. And on books, Isabel says, I read about two books per month, but I continue to buy more than that. Should I have paid more attention during basic sums class at school? And Linda says, good afternoon. I read about 100 books a year. Being semi-retired is great. When I had a small child, I was lucky to get through one a week. That's even one a week's good going, because that's 52 a year. Airfield Estate in Dundrum is a great spot to bring the kids. Ray, lovely gardens, nice new coffee shop, market at the weekends, cows, chickens, sheep, and an old Rolls Royce, all in the middle of the city. Cheers, Chris. Yeah, well, we spent a lot of time up there when the children were younger, so that's a good suggestion. Airfield, keep them coming in for Grace from New Zealand. Now, our Reeling in the Ears quiz. Yeah, we're looking for two people to come on after 4 o'clock and answer three questions each on clips they will hear in their ears, bits of songs, news reports, TV shows and movies. And there's a prize, great prize this week. A two-night break in the Photo Island Resort, which is nestled at the heart of a peaceful island surrounded by gorgeous scenery and just 8 miles from the bustling city of Cork. Two adults with breakfast each morning, dinner on one evening in the Amber Lounge. And you'll be staying in one of Photo Island Resort's luxurious guest rooms. You can experience the great facilities on site at Photo Island Resort, including the indoor swimming pool, world-class spa, fine dining restaurant, the cove, enjoy tea time. That's a TEE on the golf course, or discover the walking tracks through the mature woodlands and the resort's oriental gardens. It's a 5-star resort. You can find out more at photoisland.ie. Photoisland.ie. And here's your qualifying question. Tom Cruise's long-awaited sequel about fighter pilots is out this week. What was the original movie called? Tom Cruise's long-awaited sequel about fighter pilots is out this week. What was the original movie called? 0818715925. 0818715925. And good luck with that.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio
right,
1.
You may have seen that the Irish Independent has a story today about a UCD-based scientist by the name of David O'Connell who has made a breakthrough in his research which could lead to the development of drugs that could help stop the devastating symptoms of Alzheimer's. And David has made the hugely long trip across from UCD to RTE and he's sitting in front of me now. How are you doing, David? Thanks for coming in.
Thanks very much, mate.
Congratulations. So this is very exciting news, isn't it?
It is. It's hugely exciting and it's the culmination of a long-standing friendship and scientific relationship with a Swedish professor, Sara Linsa, in Lund University, and myself, which began way back in 2006. But in much more recent years, we decided to invent a new way of discovering drugs and new drugs themselves. And in the short period between, we've managed to identify some very strong candidates that seem to be blocking, inhibiting the processes within Alzheimer's disease.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about Alzheimer's disease first and then yes. It'll help us understand what you've done. So firstly, the number of people in the world with Alzheimer's disease is increasing because we are living longer.
That's very true. And I'm afraid to say, I think it's grossly underestimated also. We don't have very good diagnostics for this disease. In fact, to be diagnosed, you really have had to have an interview.
There's no blood test for Alzheimer's?
No, there's no blood test.
Is there a brain scan?
Oh, I think brain scans can show physicians a certain amount, but they're not going to be used diagnostically.
Okay.
So they say that currently, at least the American Association of Alzheimer's Society, estimate around 50 million worldwide, growing to 150 million by 2050. But I think it's far more than that. As many people know, there are people in the community who don't know they've got yes. these conditions.
And up until now, and right now as well, there are drugs available that sort of treat it, that they ameliorate the symptoms of it.
Well, I wish that was also true.
No, that's not true, no.
Unfortunately, even the most recently approved drug called aducanumab, which is an antibody-based medicine, it has been led to huge controversy because in the FDA approved it upon a second review, but there's no real evidence of significant benefit okay. to patients. And right. in fact, the CEO of that company had to step down as a result okay. of it. So there's right. unfortunately, it's a field dogged by this type of failure.
But you can see why everybody wants to find something that can treat it, because it's such a horrible condition.
Ray, I think, you know, we saw what a pandemic is with COVID, but actually we have a pandemic yeah. of Alzheimer's and dementia worldwide.
And you, unfortunately, your dad suffered with Alzheimer's. And is that part of the motivation for your work?
Well, yes. And I'm delighted to even mention him, because my dad, Bill O'Connell, he was a scientist himself. He did a scholarship to get into UCC Oscuilga and did his undergraduate degree Oscuilga, and that's what he needed to do to get in.
Right.
He became known as Botany Bill by his friends, and he always had this deep passion for nature, you know, science, peppering you with questions, anecdotes. So when his journey with Alzheimer's began, unfortunately, my mum, Helen, had to support him and didn't know what was happening. And in retrospect, that 10 years of change and difficulty, and my siblings, Johnny, Gail, Elaine, all rode in and helped, and their partners. But it was a real...
What age were you, David?
Oh, gosh. I mean, dad passed away in the last 4 years.
Right, you know, okay, so all right, sure.
I'm 51 this
year.
So I'm, you know, we were all adults.
30s, 40s, yeah. And to see this man who, I can even hear it in your voice now, was a hero of yours.
A hero of ours. Yeah. We all adored him. And very gregarious man, full
very
of
bright.
Fun, bright, observant, gentle.
Curious.
Also. And to see that kind of disassemble without any real understanding of why or what was happening was shocking, really, you know.
Yeah. So what is happening then? What's the physiology of it? What do we know?
I suppose the gorgeous part of the physiology is that our brain is exquisitely tuned to store memories, to complete actions, to create laughter, create love, all those things. But actually it boils down to how certain cells function in different parts of the brain. And we call them neurons mainly. There are many other types, but neurons are kind of the action cells in the brain, to be quite general. And unfortunately, within those neurons, there are a class of proteins, again, about not a lot of which is known about them, but they start to break up. And when they do, they start sticking to each other.
Right.
And that can be reversible. It can happen over many, many years. But there gets to a stage called secondary nucleation, where it speeds up and it actually kind of catalyzes itself. And so what happens is you get a lot of sticking together of proteins.
It's gloopy stuff.
Yes, and this leads to toxicity,
right?
Cell death. And so the boundaries, the character boundaries we all have each day, the memories, the functions tend to become, what's the right word, degraded.
Right.
Yeah. It's really, it's exquisite in one way to know this molecularly. But
it is, and it's like the human brain is just such an amazing thing. And the fact that we can only think about our brain with our brain is that's sort of
a circle.
Yeah, it's a circle. But it sort of brings it home that this is machinery. And the machinery is getting clogged up. And what you have done is invented these blocks that go in, and what do they do?
So if we think of the disease process as aberrant or a toxic machinery, which isn't meant to be happening, but does, then the blocks we've made can actually bind specifically to the most toxic member of that pathway. They actually don't bind any of the others. They simply look for this one most toxic species. And in doing that, they prevent the speeding up.
Right.
So they really halt, inhibit the process. Now, we are working on new variants of these to make them even better. But we were shocked, in a very pleasant way, to see what these blocks were doing, because this has never been seen before, this binding of this very toxic species by itself, because it doesn't last long. It either goes back to being something else or goes on to being kind of a more permanent structure. But it is it's like the red light. And if you can get on top of that, you can retard the process. And while you would never claim a cure, what you may be able to do with drugs like this is retard the process.
Right. And what about prevent?
So I think part of the common wisdom is if we all started taking something preventative in our 30s, we might be, you know, perfectly unaware of any. But I think the reality is for those who suffer now, who are starting their journey of suffering and their families, is that we need therapies that actually can ameliorate, as you said at the beginning, lots of the symptoms and take away a lot of the shock and surprise. And what we don't want are people going into long-term care or people at home demanding huge amounts of extra care. So if we can delay it, we can allow them function.
Now, we read about scientific advances in the papers every day.
Yes.
And then when you read behind the headlines, you say, well, hold on, wait a minute, this is just with mice and this could be 15, 20 years.
Yeah.
So what's the timeline on your discovery?
So all drugs have that type of 15-year type of window because there's clinical trials and safety. But what's nice, and you've witnessed this yourself during the COVID period, is that when something is showing sufficient promise, efficacy, there are these fast-track approvals. So Alzheimer's disease research is a strange one in that commercially it's not a major money spinner because there's been too much failure. So what's needed now are some accelerated trials for new types of molecules. Thankfully, we are already, in discussions with some companies that are clinical stage companies who know how to take a drug from a laboratory in university and present it.
Which we
have, and which has been patented by UCD, which is great. But how to bring it to pharmaceutical partners in a state of readiness.
What are the ethics involved in doing research with people who have Alzheimer's?
Gosh, I mean, I suppose Unfortunately, we are restricted to, in fact, actually one of the most powerful models we've got is a worm, C. elegans. So you can actually mimic Alzheimer's or dementia-like symptoms in a worm.
Right.
And then you can treat it and actually see them being reversed.
Okay.
So that's very useful. It's a very simple organism. We don't work in humans. The sad part is, and maybe more controversially, is there are approved medicines that do give families huge hope, but they don't, they're not disease modifying. So we need disease modifying treatments that actually, as I say, either halt or slow down this toxic process.
You see, people who have Alzheimer's aren't in a position to give permission to be involved in the... That's a conundrum, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, we all have our own personal views. I can only give my own UCDs, but
yeah.
I would be an advocate of, through my solicitor, you know, having a forward-looking statement saying, in the event of, please allow, you know, me to participate in. And I think that's actually, I've seen this, and we collaborated in a study in MD Anderson in Texas, in the USA, which was a cancer project, but those terminal wean patients, patients heading towards death that were on life support, had given prior consent for experiments to be run while their heart was still beating.
Mm.
So we're not there at all now. I'm not advocating for it. But we do need to be a bit more radical about this because it's affecting a huge number of people. Economically, it's a massive burden on society, as I think everybody knows, and I don't need to tell you that. But the number of people affected per patient is extraordinary.
Yes. You know? It brings up all sorts of ethical issues, though, doesn't it? And you would like to think that a person, if they knew what you were asking them, they would give consent. But of course, they can't because they're.
I think one thing that you're underlining very nicely is we need more focus on this.
Yeah,
we'll always have pandemics. I mean, there's more viruses probably to come out of the.
And what do you think, just because, and I said it already and it's been said over and over again, that the reason we're going to have more people in the world with Alzheimer's and dementia is because we're staying alive longer, and that's because of the advances in modern medicine. It's sort of, you know...
Yeah, I mean, I suppose our goal as humans is to stick around as long as possible.
Is it? And
to have children and to mind your dog and all of these wonderful things.
Yeah.
And sadly, you know,
Alzheimer's. But I suppose the problem is if we're staying alive and our quality of life isn't great, like what's the point?
Well, if it took you out, Ray, you know, very quickly, we wouldn't really be having much of a conversation about it. But the sad part is it does not.
No.
And there's a long runway before somebody has to be actually clinically cared for.
Yeah.
And I know my mum did a fantastic job of controlling this passionate man whose boundaries were being taken down, you know.
Yeah. It must be terrible. I think it's worse to see somebody losing their mind than their physical health. Way worse.
It's sad because there's so much of them still there. Like that, you still have a great laugh with them. You'll still, you know, enjoy a match or something like this, love a song, and a memory will be a fragment of a memory. But that's the hardest thing. It's like death by a thousand cuts. It's so slow. Yeah. You know.
So did you answer my question on how long?
No, I dodged it. we're already, so the process is now commercialization.
Yeah.
That's the patenting, UCD, and we're looking to partner up with companies. I would like to see clinical activity within the next 6 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
David O'Connell, Professor at the School of Biomolecular and Biomedical Science in UCD. Thanks so much for coming in. Thanks, David.
Thanks a million, Ray.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, it's sort of medical hour today, which is no harm. While skin cancer accounts for the majority of cancer cases in Ireland, it is largely avoidable. Noticing the early signs is of crucial importance to receiving the best treatment. May is Melanoma Awareness Month. Professor Anne-Marie Tobin is the clinical lead for dermatology in the HSE and joins me now with some advice on protecting your largest organ and staying sun smart. Good afternoon, Anne-Marie.
Good afternoon, Ray.
That's kids love that, don't they? What's the largest organ in your body?
Yeah,
skin.
Absolutely.
And we don't take care of it, do we? We're sort of negligent when it comes to our skin.
I think we're getting better, though. I think a lot of people who've young children are very conscious of protecting their skin and the sun. So it's trying to get that message through to other people and to other generations that Irish people in general are quite fair-skinned and we need to be careful in the sun.
The history of us and getting a tan. Go on. What's your understanding of it?
Well, you've Coco Chanel to blame for it, because up until the late 1800s, early 1900s, it wasn't considered fashionable at all to have a tan. In fact, it was associated with being an outdoor worker.
So
tans, you'd see ladies were, you know, using parasols to protect their skin from the sun. And Coco Chanel made tans fashionable, so she's responsible.
She's a lot to answer for, doesn't she? Yes.
She certainly does.
and seriously, it is the most common type of cancer in this country.
So the number of skin cancers every year outnumber all cancers when you add them up together. So there's over 14,000 skin cancers diagnosed every year. And that's probably not the most accurate figure. There's probably more, because the cancer registry, which actually very good data, and we're very lucky in having very good data in Ireland, records only one skin cancer, you know, for a patient. But it often, patient might have two or three.
Yes. And there are two different types of skin cancer.
So there's two different types of skin cancer. So melanoma is the one that most people probably are aware of, and that's the deadliest form of skin cancer. So that's coming up to being the third and fourth most common skin cancer in men and women. So our numbers are getting up there. So that's the one where it arises in two different ways. In half of cases, it arises from a mole changing. So people should know what to look out for in moles that change. And it's a simple rule. It's the A, B, C, D, E. So A is if a mole becomes asymmetrical.
Right.
B is if the border changes. So if it becomes sort of ragged outline. C is the colour. So if you get more than two colours in a mole. And then D is for diameter. So if a mole is getting bigger, or, you know, about 0.5, 0.6, but increasing in size.
Right.
And then E is evolution, so changing. So that's half of how melanoma arises. And then in about the other half, it arises in a new mole. So rather than a pre-existing mole, it's a new mole that arrives. You should be aware that you can get new moles, and it's perfectly normal to do so up until your mid-30s. So it's if you get a new mole and that it changes. So that's melanoma skin cancer. That's the most the deadliest type of skin cancer. So there's approximately 1,400 diagnosed every year in Ireland, but we'd have about 140 deaths from melanoma every year.
And if I never went out in the sun, is that one way of preventing it?
It would have a bit of a miserable life.
I suppose what I'm asking is it preventable? Is it completely preventable?
By and large. So the biggest risk factor for developing a melanoma is sun exposure. But there are other risk factors, such as a family history. That's an important one. And then if you've already been diagnosed with a melanoma, you've had slightly increased risk of developing a second one.
Okay. And there are different skin types, and different skin types are more or less susceptible to the effects of the sun.
Yes. No, you're absolutely right.
And we have, most of us Irish people, are pale skinned.
So it's a thing called the Fitzpatrick skin type. And your listeners can go on to the Irish Cancer Society website, and you can actually do a quiz there that'll tell you what Fitzpatrick skin type you have. So he was a dermatologist of Irish extraction in America, who in 1975 developed this type of skin. So Fitzpatrick skin type 1 always burns, never tans. So that's your redheads and people with green eyes. Fitzpatrick skin type 2 usually burns and gets minimal tan. And then Fitzpatrick skin type 3 sometimes burns but can tan. So burns and then eventually tans. So 75% of Irish people are skin type 1 and 2.
Yeah.
So we're just fair skinned.
Yeah. I suppose for a long time it didn't affect us too much because of our weather. And then we all started getting on planes and going to sunnier climes.
But actually, that's not the case
at
all.
No.
So And that's where I think people make the mistake. So from the 1st of April to the end of September in Ireland, doesn't matter if it's like today, raining every 5 minutes, you need to protect your skin from the sun, even on a cloudy day, because at that time of the year, the sun is positioned at a high enough point that the UV radiation at ground level can not necessarily burn you, but can cause damage, and you can get sunburned also.
No, you're right, and we said this the last time, and it's just all coming back to me now. that's just the only time I get burned is here in Ireland, because you take precautions when you're abroad, and the usual time I get burned is at the beginning of the summer, because you're out of the habit of applying sunscreen and wearing a hat, and that's when it catches you off guard. Yeah,
1st of April to the end of September.
Right, okay. Now, to prevent, you've the five S's. You like the A, B, C, D, E. That's asymmetrical, the border, the colour, the diameter and the evolution. That's with regards to the things. And then to prevent sun cancer and protect our skin, you have the five S's, which are?
So the five S's are to slip on clothing, because that's something that people mightn't be as aware of, but one of the best ways of protecting your skin is actually to wear long sleeves and, you know, long trousers for your children, particularly because it's miserable running after children, trying to put sunblock on. And if you hold your T-shirt up to the light and you can see the light through it, it's not going to protect you from the sun.
And natural fabrics are less likely to protect you. Is that the case?
No, it actually depends on the weave.
Right, okay.
If it's tightly woven, but the linen. So that's slip on your clothing. And only then, you're only relying on your sunblock then to protect your face, your neck, for example, and the back of your hands. Then you slip on your sunglasses, because it's important to protect your eyes from the sun as well. Stick on your hat and then seek shade from 11 until 3 o'clock, so during the hottest times of the day.
Yeah. And then slop on sunscreen.
Yes.
That's the other S. Yes. Slide on the sunglasses, slop on the sunscreen, slap on a hat, slip on clothing and seek shade.
Yes.
Right. And sunscreen, what factor should we have on?
So at least a factor 30 for adults and a factor 50 for children.
Right. No excuses.
No excuses. And, you know, there isn't really, because there's such a broad range of sunscreens that you can get. You can get them in the pharmacies or in supermarkets. You know, there's a price range for everyone.
Okay. Now, we said you were coming in, and we asked our listeners, did they have any questions for you? And they did. So let's go through a few of those. Could you ask your professor which is best, sunscreen or sunblock? Best regards, David and Dunleary.
Well, David, they're the same thing. Yeah. Sunscreen and sunblock are the same thing. In fact, the most accurate way probably to describe it is sun factor or SPF.
Yeah, what does SPF mean?
Sun protection factor.
Right. So say SPF of 30.
So that means that, so there's two types of radiation that you're trying to protect your skin against. One is UVB, which is what causes it to burn, and the other is UVA, which can damage your skin cells. So the SPF refers to the protection from UVB. So what a 30 means is, let's say you go out and burn within 5 minutes in the sun, you can stay out 30 times longer than your burning time.
Right, 2.5 hours.
Yeah, and that's the other thing, that mistake that people make. You kind of have to reapply your sun, your SPF. And then the other thing is the number of stars an SPF has, which refers to the UVA protection. And that's on the back of the sunblock. And ideally, you want one with 5 stars. So quite good UVA and UVB protection.
Right. And what about vitamin D?
That's a good question. And we're all much more conscious of vitamin D after COVID. So, and you're absolutely right, because a lot of people who live in northern
Europe
or northern latitudes are vitamin D deficient. But the amount of sunshine that you require to generate vitamin D is estimated to be about 15 minutes. Okay. So it's completely different to the amount that you're going to burn.
Yeah.
So most people are getting enough sunshine.
Okay, right.
So that's okay. One thing. But the other thing I would say, though, is that if people are very careful, and some people are careful about their sun because they have lupus or something like that, they should take super milk or supplements, sorry.
Yeah, vitamin D, yeah. Okay, my eight-year-old came back from holidays with her cousins after the weekend with fierce sunburn. I'm very worried about the long-term damage to her skin. Can you ask your expert what I can do to offset it?
Well, I feel so sorry for the mum. I wouldn't be overly concerned. One sunburn isn't going to, cause permanent damage to her daughter's skin, and as long as it's not a blistering sunburn, and just make sure that she doesn't get another sunburn. And then with regard to offsetting it, the mum is saying that she's using after sun and aloe vera, so she's doing everything just
right. If you get a number of bad sunburns as a child, that affects your long-term possibilities of getting skin cancer.
For example, a blistering sunburn as a child can double your risk of melanoma.
Right. Yeah. Oh. Because I remember a blistering one when I was about 8 or 9.
You never forget.
No, it's the horrible.
Pain.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then the itchiness and then the scabs and all that.
Miserable.
Yeah. I've a mole on the tip of my armpit. The tip of my armpit that got aggravated by a scratchy top. It's a bit redder and more inflamed than usual. Is there anything I should do with it?
I would let that settle down because I suspect that has just become irritated by friction.
Okay.
Yeah.
Don't worry too much. I can't stand to wear hats, says this person, presuming it's a man, but my hair is receding a lot. Is there anything I can use to stop the bald patches from getting burned this summer?
Well, you can use, an SPF, factor 50. Although, sometimes that makes you sweat.
There's nothing better than a hat. He just has to find a hat that suits him.
Unfortunately. We used to see these problems, when gentlemen wore hats in the 50s.
Yeah.
You used to see half the number of skin cancers on patients' heads.
Because you get a lot on bald heads, do you? Mm-hmm.
Well, right. It's a completely horizontal surface that you're presenting to the sun.
Yeah, well, I'm a hat wearer when it comes to the sun. The warm weather is making my, I can never pronounce that.
Rosacea
flare up. Does the skin expert know of anything I could use to prevent that from happening? I use SPF already and Carav, is it? With its
CeraVe,
there you go, with its gentlest face wash I can find for my face. Any ideas?
The listener is doing actually everything right because they're absolutely right. UV light can flare up rosacea, which is, it's known as the curse of the Celts. It's very, very common among Irish people.
So this is on your cheeks, is it?
So it's where people get little red bumps or they can be little pustules and then they get kind of background redness. And then when it progresses, you can have a lot of broken veins across the nose. And in fact, you can get thickening of the nose and of the chin.
Right.
Kind of Serrano de Bergerac.
Yeah, the sort of the whiskey nose that people... It's not true whiskey.
Well, three things drive it.
Right, go on.
One is sunshine.
Yeah.
The second is alcohol.
All right.
The other thing is spicy food.
Okay.
So it's not quite divorced from the whiskey.
So if you're a person who eats curries outside and drinks a lot of whiskey, then it would... all the contributory factors there.
But they're doing all the right things. And perhaps, if they maybe reapply the SPF...
Good luck with that. This is going to annoy you. Is there any difference between using 20 versus 50 when it comes to tanning?
So the big thing with that is the word tanning.
Tanning, I know. I knew that would get you going. Go on. You don't like the word tanning at all.
No, because tanning is, it's your skin.
It's like browning meat. It's like browning your, searing your steak.
Pretty much. So when you tan, in your cells, it's a thing called melanin moving over to try and prevent your nucleus from being damaged from the sun. It's your skin actually trying to protect yourself. So there's no such thing as a healthy tan.
Right.
It's damaging to your skin. And even apart from the risk of skin cancer, it's aging.
Yeah.
So you might look healthy now, but give it 10 years and you probably won't look quite so.
It's mad because I remember back in the day when very few people went on, foreign holidays, and that person had come back, and everybody wanted, to know them because they looked healthy and more attractive and all the good stuff.
But there's fake tan.
Yes, yeah. Fake tan. But we're big consumers of fake tan in this country.
Absolutely. I think we're one of the highest per capita users of fake tan. But there's loads of different good brands of fake tan. But with regard to the difference between 20 and a 50, so a 50 is going to completely protect yourself from sun damage, whereas a 20 won't give you that degree of protection.
Okay. And finally, my skin has become very dry. I used some beds for a couple of years, about 4 years ago, but have stopped. Could it be damaged as a result? Can I reverse that damage?
Well, with regard to sunbeds, I mean, they're probably even more of a risk of developing skin cancer because the radiation is much more intense. Whether or not the dryness is related, possibly not. As you get older, your skin becomes more dry anyway. So I'm not sure I would attribute that completely to the sunbed, but certainly the radiation that you're getting on the sunbed is aging. So the most potent or the most useful anti-aging, so forget all the creams and the collagen, is actually protecting your skin from the sun.
There you go.
It's the most anti-aging thing.
I was looking at a picture I was telling you before we went on air of Anne Hathaway. She was on a red carpet at the Cannes Film Festival. There's a brilliant picture on the cover of, I think, The Guardian on Saturday morning. And there's a wall of photographers and she's there being photographed by them. And then she's looking over her shoulder at another photographer who's taking her and the wall of photographers. But she has, a backless dress and she's white. She's completely white. No sun got near that skin at all.
Yeah. She's beautiful skin.
Beautiful skin. If I ever meet her, Anne, you have beautiful skin. What factor do you use? So anyway, are you hopeful? We're getting better, are we?
Oh, absolutely.
We've got over our infatuation with sun.
Well,
no, not really.
I would hope we have. And the thing, I think maybe even in terms of fashion, that the tide might be turning. So for example, if you look at the models in Italian Vogue, they're all pale. So I think the tide may be turning on that.
Okay.
But it's an entirely preventable skin cancer.
Yes, yes. So there you go. That's the message. The 5 S's, I better go back to them now. Seek shade, slip on clothing, slap on a hat, slap on sunscreen and slide on some sunglasses. There you go, all the S's.
And you can get that. Healthy Ireland have a little infographic. The Irish Cancer Society or irishskin.ie.
Final question before you go, because people are going to the cupboard now to fetch last year's sunscreen. Is it still as potent as it was this time last year?
So when you take out your bottle of sunscreen, which of course will be empty because you used so much of it the previous year, there's a symbol on the back that almost looks like a jar with the lid off, and it'll either say 6 months or 12 months. So people usually know roughly when they bought it. So that tells you how long you can use it for after it's been open and before the active ingredients degrade.
Right.
So just look at that, because you're absolutely right, they do have a shelf life.
Oh, they do, right.
Yeah, when they're open.
Okay. Professor Anne-Marie Tobin, clinical lead for dermatology in the HSE. Thanks so much for sharing all your knowledge with us. Thank you.
You're welcome.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Tweet at Radio Ray RTE. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Anish Tarsha now on the Prief Skelton in Oakla, the Maura de Wallish. Gorma, good Maura. Thank you very much. 51551 ray at RTE.ie. Now, some of the texts we didn't get to in the last hour, we were speaking to Professor David O'Connell from UCD. And he is developing a treatment for Alzheimer's. Now, it's 6 or so years down the road. And this person says, our wonderful dad passed away from Alzheimer's dementia at the start of COVID. He faded away in front of our eyes for 3 years. But the only thing that made him light up was when he saw his grandchildren coming into his house to visit him as we cared for him at home till he passed away. Hope at last, too late for my husband who has lived with Alzheimer's for 14 years, but hope for my children, says that person. And what a wonderful man you have on. My partner just diagnosed with Alzheimer's. It's not easy. Lovely, lovely to hear that, gentleman. Many thanks, says Carrie. And on protecting your bald head from the sun, my neighbour wears a large cabbage leaf on his head instead of a hat. I'm sure as you know, there's something involved, that, you know, that something from the cabbage leaf helps the skin. Maybe, I don't know. I'd like to see a picture of that. But get his permission now if you're going to take a picture of him. It's time for Reeling in the Ears. Okay, we have two quizzers standing by, and they'll be answering three questions on clips they'll hear, and they may win a prize. Well, one of them definitely will win a prize, and it's a two-night break in the Fota Island Resort. Nestled in the heart of a peaceful island surrounded by gorgeous scenery and just 8 miles from Cork City. So, two nights stay and dinner on one evening. Loads of things to do. There's a swimming pool, a world-class spa, fine dining restaurant called The Cove. It's a 5-star resort. You can find out more at fotaisland.ie. Kieran Moran is in Ballina, the Ballina in County Cavan. How are you doing, Kieran?
How are you, Ray? How are things?
Good. And you know it's the Cavan Ballina because it's A-G-H.
It's Ballina rather than Ballina.
Excuse me. Ballina.
Don't worry about it. It took me 2 years to learn how to say it.
Right, because you're a dub living up in Ballina.
I am, yeah.
So there's
off a little part called Ochoni, which is even harder to say.
Where?
It's called Ochoni.
And that's near Ballina, is it?
It's just in the village. It's just outside the village.
Okay, right. Because there's a Ballina down, Killaloe Ballina, down in County Clare, and then there's the Ballina in County Mayo. And I'm sure there's other Ballinas as well. And you're running a jam company.
I do. Myself and my wife Claire, we have a little jam company in Cavan called Moran's Mega Jam. We make quirky jams and chutneys. So we make like blackcurrant and Guinness and strawberry and bubblegum and rhubarb and custard, right, things like that, mad ones rather than just the plain. Well, we make the traditional ones as well, but we make all quirky ones.
How did you get into jam, Kieran?
Oh, well, back in the day I was a chef and I was working in a hotel, and I used to love making all the jams and chutneys. And one day when I gave up being a chef, I started off at the farmer's market, and it just grew into a business. It wasn't something I had intended to be. It was sort of a hobby on a Saturday, and it just grew into a business, and we're now supplying Super Value across the country. We supply and independent stores like that as well.
Oh, brilliant.
So it's all right. We've managed to hang on in there.
Yeah. Was it tough during COVID?
It was. We lost about 70% of the business overnight with the lockdown. But all the coffee shops and restaurants and hotels.
Oh, yes.
We would have supplied a good bit of like buckets of jam and tubs of chutneys and stuff into them.
Yeah.
But thank God they're all coming back, and we've managed to hang on in there over the last 2 years. And no, it's going all right now.
Right.
Touch wood, as you say.
You sound happy enough anyway.
I'm working with sugar all day long. I'm probably high.
That's right. You're up against Daphne Barden, and there is a connection actually with Daphne Barden from Newtown Forbes in County Longford. How are you doing, Daphne?
Hi, Ray. How are you?
So you're in sort of the sugar business as well.
Well, do you know, funny, I don't live that far from Ballina, and when you pass through Ballina, you can smell the jam coming out because the shop is on the main road, the main street.
Right. And you're beekeepers.
That's right, yeah. So we're beekeepers in County Longford.
So do you deal in honey or what do you do?
Yeah, we deal in honey. We keep bees in lots of different apiaries, so our business is just where basically we keep bees for lots of different businesses. So there's businesses like Lochgreen Castle have our bees, and Longford County Council keep our bees.
Right.
And we go around to the place and look after them.
Aha. And do you produce honey at home?
Yeah, we produce lots of honey at home as well. So we sell our honey at our gate in a little honesty box, and we sell it then in lots of different stores around Longford. And if we had more, we'd branch out like Moran's, but unfortunately we can't.
And what do you call your honey?
We're called Long Garden Bees.
Long Garden Bees, right.
Yeah.
Isn't that mad? Because you know there are hives now on top of the GPO.
Yeah, that's right. Do you know, we actually have a hive on the top of PwC at Spencer Dock. So it's not a million miles away there.
And what happens then? What they approach and say, we want a hive. Why would they want a hive on the top of their building?
Because bees actually can thrive in urban areas as well as rural. Now, we find that they do a lot better in rural areas where we live. Like, I mean, there's hedgerows as far as I can see here, but they can thrive in Dublin City as well. So, you know, there's lots of different food crops for bees in Dublin, but it's more the message that they send. I mean, we don't want to keep bees at PwC just because we want bees there. We want to share the message that pollinators are so vital to us, and having them at a really visible place reminds people, you know, please don't mow, let it grow, don't spray the weed killer, and, you know, let everything
grow. We had a man on last year, we must get him back on. He was doing a census, an audit of bushes for bees,
Yeah.
So he's been doing it, I think he's a retired teacher, but he's been doing it for 50 years or something like that, counting the number of bees in a bush. And he does it every year. We must get back onto him. And you're on your way back from Dublin now to...
Yeah, I'm actually home now. We had a busy day, but it's back in Longford now, so you can probably hear ducks and...
Yes,
and
I can, yeah. It sounds good. It sounds good.
Yeah. We had a busy day. I was dropping back trophies to... The Longford County Show was coming up in July, so I had to drop back trophies to the man who runs that, Tom Bannon. So it was just a day of doing deliveries and... small jobs, but
and now you're home. Listen to the radio, and you could win a prize. Okay, so it's Kieran Moran from Ballinia, County Cavan, against Daphne Barden from Newtown Fores and County Longford. Good luck to you both. Three questions each on clips you will hear. If you go for a long clip, you get a point. If you go for a shorter clip, it's more difficult, so you get 2 points. Whoever has the most clips at the end, sorry, the most points at the end, wins the prize. If it's a draw on points, then we go to our tie-break question. Good luck to you both. Here we go. Okay, Kieran. The year is 1995. 1995, okay? And we're starting at the movies. Do you want a long clip or a short clip?
Actually, we'll go for a short clip today.
Short
clip,
okay. This 1995 supernatural family movie stars Christina Ricci as a young girl who moves into a house that she suspects has a ghostly presence. Can you name it? And here is your short clip.
I wonder why you don't remember anything. I guess because when you're a ghost...
That's Casper, right?
It is Casper. Well done. The movie earned $287.9 million at the box office. Isn't that mad? And it only cost $55 million to make, and you get 2 points for that. Well done. Good start, Kieran. Daphne, 1995, we're at the movies. Do you want to go long or short?
I'm going to go long. Sorry, go short.
Go short.
Kieran Ryan short.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Right. Robin Williams stars in this classic 1995 movie that features menacing board game. Can you name the movie? Here we go.
It's not your turn.
Yeah. I rolled first and then Peter twice because he got doubles. And now it's my turn again.
Jumanji?
Yes. It was remade with The Rock recently, but that's the 1995 original with Robin Williams. You get 2 points. Good start. Right, back to you, Kieran. Music this time from 1995. Do you want a long clip or a short clip?
Oh, we'll go a short one again.
Okay, this one was a huge hit in 1995. Can you name the song or the singer? Here is your short clip.
Give me just a taste, so I want more.
Any idea?
No, I'm gone blank.
Yeah. You'd sort of know it when you hear it. Edwyn Collins, Girl Like You. He used to be the lead singer with Orange Juice. Remember, they had Rip It Up as a big hit for them, but that was a Girl Like You. Okay, right. Daphne, an opportunity for you now. Still in 1995, still on music. Do you want a long clip or a short clip?
I'll go short, I think.
You
right?
Go short, okay.
I don't know it.
This song was absolutely everywhere in 1995. Can you name the song or the singer? Here's a short clip.
I have no clue. No clue? No clue.
It was Scatman by Scatman John. So, there you go.
I know the song. Don't know.
That's what it was. Okay, which makes it nice and even. So both of you are still on two. We're down to the final question, which is news and current affairs from 1995. Kieran, now, if you go short and get two, it puts Daphne under a lot of pressure. You can take the easy option and go for a long one, but then if Daphne goes for a short one and gets it right, she beats you. So what's it going to be?
I don't know, Ray. I'm sweating. I think I'll go for the short one.
I was going to say you're in a bit of a jam. No, right, okay, you go for the short one. Okay, 1995 saw Newgrange welcome a very royal guest. Can you name them? And here is your short clip by way of a clue.
Yeah, and I thought your first impression of the royal county Meath.
And it just landed. Give me a minute.
It looks pretty good from here.
Prince Charles, was it?
It is Prince Charles, yeah. He travelled to the Boyne Valley and the Newgrange megalithic tomb, where he was welcomed by the then Taoiseach John Bruton and his wife. And you get 2 points for that, putting Daphne under a bit of pressure. So, Daphne, we know what you have to do here.
Yeah.
You have to go short,
first.
Don't you? Yes, you do.
Go right. Short.
Okay, news from 1995. That year saw this sporting legend part company with the Republic of Ireland soccer team. Can you name him? Here's your clue for 2 points.
He either worked in the pit
or you play football. When lads that are left tashing, they're going away to play football.
Who's that?
Jack Charlton.
It is Jack Charlton, yes.
Yay!
Hey, hey, ole, 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 ole. Put him under pressure. He put you under pressure and you rose to the occasion. Okay, so it's a draw then on points. We're going to the equivalent now of a penalty shootout. Sorry about that. It's a tiebreaker question. We asked you this question before you went on air. We haven't done this in a while, actually. I'm going to repeat the question for our listeners, and then whoever has guessed the closest to the correct answer is today's winner. According to Google Maps, how long would it take you to drive from the Cliffs of Moher in County Clare to the Pool Beg Chimneys in Dublin? Two iconic landmarks. And your guess, Kieran, was?
I think I said something like 4 hours, 20 minutes.
That's exactly what you said. Yep. It's 282 kilometres. And you said, Daphne?
3 hours 25.
So you're on the road a lot. The correct answer is 3 hours and 20 minutes, which means that Daphne's today's winner.
Congratulations.
Yes. Well done. Sorry about that, Kieran, because it was so close.
Sorry, Kieran.
You can't get much closer than that.
No bother.
We're going to send you out a couple of mugs.
Oh, thanks very much. We'd be delighted to have them here.
One for you and one for Claire. And good luck with Morin's Mega Jam.
Thank you.
See you, Kieran. Bye now. Bye. And congratulations to you, Daphne.
You're
off with a person of your choice to the Photo Island Resort. It's a 5-star resort. You can find out more about the swimming pool, the spa, everything there is to do around there at photoisland.ie. Photoisland.ie. Well done, Daphne. Good talking to you.
Thanks,
see
Ray.
You
now.
Bye,
thank
bye,
you.
Bye, bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Our next guest is a composer and arranger. He has worked with everybody from Muddy Waters, Nick Drake, Prince, Amy Winehouse, John Legend, George Michael, Bjork, Rod Stewart, Tom Jones, and the list goes on. And he whistles on this.
Always look on the bright side of life. Always look on the light side of life.
John Altman, good afternoon.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. You're coming to Hinterland, which is a festival of literature and arts in Kells, County Meath, between the 23rd and the 26th of June.
That's, I am indeed.
That's the important really bit out of the way, John. That's the we've done that. So where do we start? All that list of names. I want to ask you so many questions about so many people, but we'll start with Monty Python. And always look on the bright side of life. So it was a half-baked song or a fully baked song when it got to you? Hello, John. John is gone. Ah.
Hello.
Hello, there you are, John. There you are. Yes. I was just saying, can you hear me? No. Always look on the bright side. We play that again. Okay, let's see. 50 seconds. You have 50 seconds. 50 seconds to get them on.
Always look on the bright side of life. Always look on the light side of life. If life seems jolly rotten, there's something you've forgotten, and that's to laugh and smile and dance and sing. When you're feeling in the dumps, don't be silly chumps. Just purse your lips and whistle, that's the thing. Hey.
Always look on the bright side.
Take two. John Altman, how are you?
I'm back. I have no idea what happened.
It's not a sketch. This is real. Okay, so when the song came to you, it was fully formed or half-baked or what?
No, it was basically just Eric Idle playing guitar and singing, and that was it. And he said, I've got an idea how we can end this film, because that was the big bugbear at the time.
For the life of Brian,
Yeah, they just didn't know how they were going to finish it. So he thought, oh, I'll write a song. And sent it over to me on a cassette, and I put basically everything you hear on the record together, and the rest is history, including my awful whistling.
it's quite good whistling. Not everybody can whistle, John.
No, actually, it does sound pretty good. I can still hear myself above everybody else.
Yeah. You became known as the hidden man when it came to Monty Python, because you were always there but never seen.
Yeah, I was involved with them from 1973 up till, I still am in a funny way.
Yeah.
I'm still in contact with everyone. And, I had some wonderful times, you know, doing stage shows and films and TV and being a Mountie and singing the Lumberjack song.
You've done that, have you?
Oh, I've done that at the Royal Albert Hall. Yes, that was a highlight.
Yeah. All you've achieved, and dressing up as a Mountie and singing I'm a Lumberjack and I Don't Care, is one of the highlights. There you go. That says it all.
Well, I think it is. I think it's a big highlight, definitely.
I was just doing the maths on it. That means next year, John Altman, your involvement with Monty Python will be half a century, 50 years.
I know. It's scary because, to me, half a century ago is the First World War, you know, and suddenly...
We trick ourselves like that, don't we? I'm not getting old, yeah.
No. And then you get older and then you start talking about things that happened, you know, as you say, 50 years ago.
I'm fascinated by you, John, because I didn't know you existed until today. And now I realise that you were involved in a lot of the stuff that I've been listening to over the years. You started out in a band with Chaz Jankel. Well, that was, I think, the second band you were in, was it?
Yeah, we're all 15, 16 years old. And Rick Parnell, who just passed away, was the drummer in Spinal Tap. And Pete Van Hook, who was Mike and the Mechanics and now looks after Paul Carrick, was in the band.
Mm.
But we were a schoolboy band. But all the bands that I was in when I was a kid, somebody went on to do something, you know, whether it was somebody with Yes or somebody with Free or somebody with Ian Dury, you know, they all went on to bigger and better things.
Chaz Jankel played with Ian Dury, didn't he? And he was...
Yes, he wrote all his hits, and he wrote I Know Corrida for Quincy Jones.
And Hit Me With Your Rhythm Stick for...
Hit Me With Your Rhythm Stick,
yeah.
And then Kim Rowe, who was in a band with me, wrote Walking on Sunshine, which meant he never had to work again, I think.
So you're a talented bunch of 16, 17-year-olds.
Unbelievable, yes, all around the same area and, you know, getting into music and starting to play. And
you play saxophone is your main instrument, but you arrange and compose.
Yes.
So you're a gun for hire.
I was, yes. I mean, I didn't know that I was an arranger or a composer, and these things fell in my lap. And I started doing them, and I had some success. So... Right. Hey presto, there I was.
So I'm just looking, a name I didn't mention there, a huge fan of Alison Moyet, and you arranged that old devil called Love.
Yes, I did, yeah.
Yeah, and that was the reason you ended up working with George Michael.
It was, funnily enough, although he had known me when he was a kid and I was older, because his father had the restaurant next door where we rehearsed, and he would listen sitting outside, which was extraordinary. But he rang me at home, having heard that Old Devil Called Love, and said, I've written a song in the same vein, and I'd love you to put it together for me, which was Kissing a Fool on Faith.
Let's have a listen. We could have shown them all. But remember this, every other kiss that you ever He was a genius, John.
Oh, amazingly. Yes, yeah. Absolutely brilliant. And that's quite rare for me because I'm actually playing saxophone on the record as well as having written the arrangement.
Ah, right.
Which is something I never usually did.
Why not?
I like to focus on the overall sound, you know, everything was right. And I always felt that when I played, I got too involved in, do I sound good? Did I play well there? And you lose the overall picture. Yeah. So I would conduct, and my friends were great sax players. They would play on the record. And I had an overview of what was going on rather than the slightly intense focus on my own playing.
Of course. That overview, you should really, surrender your body to science when you go, because I would imagine your brain is constructed differently to the rest of us, because you can see and hear an arrangement in your head.
Yes. I've always been able to sort of sit at a table and write an orchestral arrangement and know what it's going to sound like.
Amazing.
Very strange. I should be locked up, I think.
And was there any formal training for that?
No. I could just always... I come from a family of musicians and arrangers, and I just... As soon as I started hearing music, I heard it in its component forms as well as its full form, you know, so... I could say, well, the violins are doing this, the violas are doing that, yeah. There's a cello here and a bassoon there and the brass section here, and which stood me in good stead in the early days, because I would do a lot of transcribing for BBC Variety, for example. So somebody like the Stylistics or even Telly Savalas would come over from the States and not have any music, and I would get a cassette of their record and write down what was on the record. So they had an arrangement.
Yes.
And then they could go and do Top of the Pops or the Two Ronnies or whatever the show was.
Yeah. Wow. So you could deconstruct it in your head and write. That's brilliant.
Yeah. I would just play the cassette and hear exactly what was going on and write it all down.
I'm going to play a little piece of music here, and you're going to tell us the story of the recording of it after we hear it.
It's oh so still. Shh, shh, you're all alone. Shh, shh, and so peaceful until
here comes the band.
You fall in love.
Bjork and her version of "It's So Quiet," which you arranged.
Yes, it's my big band playing.
Yes, and one take, I believe.
First take.
Yeah.
Live.
And that's what we hear when we play it on the radio.
And that's it, yeah. What you hear is exactly what happened in the studio. And the reason for that, I'm afraid to say, or I'm pleased to say, actually, in the end of the day, is that she arrived in the studio with 10 minutes left in the recording session. So we could really only do one take and hope for the best. And she nailed it. Well, not only she nailed it, but the band nailed it.
The band nailed it. That's
it's extraordinary.
Yeah.
She sang in a booth. I could hear her. The rhythm section could hear her. The brass players and sax players sitting in the main part of the room couldn't hear her. All they could hear was the drums, and everybody was watching my conducting.
Wow.
It's just so bizarre.
That's a great story.
To think that you're... Talk about, you're on the ice. That really was, you're on the ice, But we got there. We did it.
You arranged the arrangement of Hey Manhattan by Prefab Sprout, which is lush and lovely and gorgeous. You've done, people will know, well, they won't know, but when they're watching some of their favourite movies, you've been responsible for music on GoldenEye and Titanic and other things. And yet you could walk in here, or you could walk into your local pub, well, maybe not your local pub, but a pub in Dublin, and nobody would recognise you, John.
Oh, yeah. The thing is, when I joined years ago, I joined Hot Chocolate as an auxiliary member.
Now, hold on. I tell you what, they've just told me we're running out of time. When John Altman is in town, would he come in and bring his saxophone with him, and we'll continue this conversation? And I'm completely in agreement if you take up our offer, our invitation.
Absolutely.
You will.
No, I'd love
Great.
To.
Brilliant.
I've got so many stories.
Yes.
And they're all in my book.
Yes, and I'll have read the book by the time you come in. Just a thing, I got an email this morning at 8:30 from a friend of mine to tell me that, did you know there is no bass guitar on Prince's When Doves Cry? I'll leave you with that piece of information, John, to take away.
That's right. And of course, I played with Prince.
You did. See, there you go. So, the Hinterland Festival of Literature and Arts, you can hear all of John's stories. And it's in Kells County Meath from 23rd, 26th of June. John Altman, thank you very much for the moment. Thank you.
My pleasure.
Bye now. That's it from us. Sarah's on the way with Drive Time. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Monday evening.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.